everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cosmic Echoes. I'm Matt. He's Lee. We're here with James W. Gesso with the Adventures Through the Mind podcast. We're here and we got some questions for him. He has a wealth of information on his site, jameswgesso.com. Is that right? jameswgesso.com. It's cool. And we're going to get right into the interview. Lee, won't you start us off?
So, James, why don't you give us a little bit of background about what you do with your website, as well as your podcast, writings, lectures. I'm particularly interested in lectures. So,
I'd say generally what I do is mostly wonder about stuff aloud and for the public record. And a lot of the times what I'm wondering about is the implications or the potentials and possibilities around psychedelics, oftentimes focused on psilocybin, because that's been a big one for me, but psychedelics in general, and being that psychedelics are, they lack any real impact without the sacred partner of the mind. You know, these molecules, what do they even mean to any human whatsoever if they are not interacting with the human mind in some way? Which means to wonder about psychedelics is also to wonder about the nature of mind and why we experience things the way that we do, and sort of a whole series of questions around that, around the nature of who we are and our experience and what might be the disposition of experience and of the human mind that leads to whatever it is that psychedelics offer us, and how the interaction in the two can be fine-tuned or formulated towards, say, generally specific outcomes. And then there's the question of how does the mind grapple with the implications of what is encountered during a psychedelic experience, which is often very different than what the sort of narrow bandwidth of experience for the average human in the modern world today might be. And those are some of the questions, I guess, that's what I do with my site. I mean, if I were to go just like really general, you know, I do a podcast and I write stuff and I talk about things, and periodically I go on, you know, like sojourns to other places to wonder about things to crowds of people.
Nice. Yeah. I heard you're going to be traveling soon, giving some lectures, I guess.
Yeah. Just in a few days, actually. I'm in the mad dash to get things organized to leave my zone for a few weeks.
Okay. Nice. What are some of those, like, how do those lectures take place? Like, what are your, specific topics kind of that you kind of dive into with those lectures, and like your age group kind of that show up?
Well, the age group is always dependent on the scenario, I guess. But oftentimes I'm giving lectures in four possible varieties of places, one of which is at a festival, another of which is at a conference of some type, which ranges from more academic conferences to less academic conferences. Another type would be in an in-city event where people contact me to come to their city and speak to their community. And then the third would be, would just be to smaller groups of people who are my friends to explore and sort of like sample my BS and see if it smells right. And it ranges from, you know, younger people, 16, 17, through my age group, which is, I'm 32. So basically ranging from 16 up to people in middle age and older who come. I mean, I think this is a relevant topic for people of all ages, because being that psychedelics in general effect, like I said, impacts the mind of a 15-year-old and the mind of a 70-year-old are very different minds. I mean, you know, neurodegenerative disorders notwithstanding, even if like full cognitive capacities are still there. Mm-hmm. It's a very different experience to trip psychedelics when you're this close to, you know, what is reasonable to say to death's door than you would be at 17, or at least biologically. I mean, every one of us is, we don't know when the second half of our life started or will start. So there's relevance there insofar as age groups. Insofar as topics, often the topics obviously focus around psychedelics, but they change every year and expand. Like questions evolve and they sort of spiral. They spiral out and then back in at new levels of complexity and out and back in. And so I've spoken about things like, you know, how can we use psilocybin mushrooms to in a part of our personal development practice, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, as well as talked about, you know, what might be the role of psychedelics in trauma resolution. I've also talked about the impact of food on how we, like what we eat and how we experience reality. And I've also talked about, I think it was last year, I talked about intergenerational trauma and healing intergenerational trauma. I did one year, I was talking about the potentials for conscious relationships in cultivating psycho-spiritual maturity. And then this year, I've also given super heady talks about the nature of reality, psychedelics as cognitive enhancers for self-awareness. But this year I'm talking primarily on the relationship between psilocybin use and the cultivation of compassion inside of a larger framework of early childhood conditioning, early childhood trauma, and the manifestation of early childhood trauma in adult psychological behaviors and tendencies and patterns of perception, as well as discussions around another talk that I'll be giving. I think I'm only giving this one once in that sci-fi festival, around, well, it's called, I'll just give you the name of it, something along the lines of ritualistic suffering, psychedelics, and the meaning of life. So sort of like a psychedelic solution to existentialism or something.
Awesome.
So that's, I'm always just curious about staying within, you know, my general mode of what I'm curious about, mm-hmm. what I think is impactful and has been impactful for me, but also venturing out and not being afraid to be like, oh, you know what? A year ago, I thought this idea was correct and I knew it. And now in hindsight, it actually seems almost fundamentally incorrect or just no longer relevant to the discussion at hand, and being willing to say like, I don't think that anymore. I change, yeah. I grow, I learn. So yeah, I like to keep things fresh, but also tying everything back into my larger body of work.
Interesting, man. Yeah. I was looking at some of your videos and stuff, and it definitely seemed like you were implying that psychedelics were generally can be used as a medicine versus like just trying to have trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's a potential for sure, and then they could also be used just to have trips, and there could be some value there, and there definitely has been value there for me. I think the goal, or say the intention to explore novel states of mind simply to map them and bring them back for curious exploration amongst your compadres in this radical journey, you know, of exploring the seas of the mind, like the unmapped seas of the mind. I think there's a lot of value there. It's not the most like media savvy for the reintegration of psychedelics in the modern world. Mm-hmm. And it might not, insofar as we'll say our modern social value system, it might not mark as high on the necessity scale as, say, curing depression or post-traumatic stress disorder or nicotine addiction, or end-stage life anxiety, which is a very huge issue in our culture, or mm-hmm. modern own culture. But, you know, the exploration simply for the sake of exploration, I think, has value too. I think there's some more pitfalls there about getting confused and getting lost. But there's still value.
Definitely.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah.
So I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Here at Cosmic Echo, we primarily talk about, you know, altered states of consciousness, primarily through, like, you know, dreams and lucid dreaming and all the, you know, altered states of awareness that we have, that everybody has. But psychedelics in psychedelic experiences is kind of a strange one to get across from somebody who hasn't had one. It's like, it's talking about, you know, the nature of reality seems strange to the average person who, you know, he's always like, oh, reality is reality. You know, we got one reality. So it's very strange to talk about something that you experienced in isolation through a psychedelic experience as a, you know, a trip or something like that as real whenever somebody has a narrow definition of reality. How do you in general broach this subject with somebody that isn't familiar with these kind of things?
It would be unfair to generalize because every person's different. And in order to get something across to another person, in order to explain something in a way that another person can understand, you have to meet that other person where they're at. And that said, I generally pretty good to do that. And then on another level, it's like, if they still don't understand, that's not really my problem. You know, go think about it for a little while. But if I were to generalize, which I don't think is accurate, I would say that, a psychedelic experience is almost like a waking dream where, I would say it's almost like being in a waking dream, but an added sense of everything being extra meaningful and extra impactful. And often the content that emerges is directly relevant to a person's, say, underlying psychological patterns, the why underneath why we do things and why we perceive things the way that we do. And that in exploring those experiences such as these, there could be great benefit to how we conduct ourselves in the world, which would be, I'd say that's a general way. Yeah, but it is difficult for sure. It's like trying to explain to someone who has never had, you know, heterosexual sex what it's like to press your penis inside the vagina.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know, or something along those lines. It's like trying to describe to someone who's never exercised a day in their life what it's like to be in that peak state of runner's high.
Yeah.
Or why it feels good to feel like you're going to throw up or something, you know? So it is difficult to explain, and to some degree you never will. You can only hope to align their curiosity and their wondering with some sliver of palpable connection to what it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And using language as the means to do that. But ultimately without the experience, it would be impossible to know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's nice that you say like there's a language that we can use for other people, like something accepted. Like, I noticed you use like kind of Jungian, Carl Jungian, you know, terminology for like the shadow self, the ego, that kind of thing. And those are like pretty widely accepted states of, you know, internal, you know, processing of information and like, you know, the subconscious and stuff like that. So that's why I just broached the subject. Like, is there like a method that you use to be like, hey, you know, your shadow self is, you know, could be attributed to these kinds of, you know, internal subconscious dialogues that you have?
Yeah, I definitely use sort of I effort towards common language. One of my favorite teachers, or I look up to him as a teacher for me, is Stephen Jenkinson. And he says something along the lines of he explains things with nickel words. And even though he's got lots of $64,000 words hanging around, you know, what is really the value of that in a conversation when you're trying to explain something to someone? That said, I love throwing around poetic language that slightly confuses in a way that's impactful. Like it confuses in the direction of understanding. And also I reach to the stuff that has strong explanatory value, for a wider reach without, you know, eliminating necessary, elements for the sake of explanatory value to a wider audience. But things like the shadow, yeah, definitely. It's really easy to grasp. It's like really, I think the word I'm looking for here is like salient for the modern discourse around, you know, the experience of ourselves and of our mind and of other people. And so it has a lot of value there. Plus, I think Jungian stuff is awesome, and it's really, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, James, I have a question. So for you, why psychedelics? Why is that so much of a passion of yours to teach people, to write about it, to, it seems like it's integrated in pretty much everything that you do in life.
Well, is it because I'm wearing this hyper psychedelic shirt?
No, man. I mean, you're
this is an interesting character that I like the little, what is that, like a lion or a panther?
I guess. A friend of mine made it for me. Anyways, it's let's not talk cool. about okay. it. Let's not talk about my shirt. I was just saying. yeah, I don't know. I could probably explain to you a series of events, you know, that might work as to create a causal chain or a causal web that has, you know, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, what's your story?
Formed around me. Yeah. I mean, my story is a long one, but let's just say that at some point in time in my life, psychedelics found their way in, and the resulting confusion, delirium, and awestruck ignorance that came as a consequence of that landed in my life in a way that has been very positive, in the sense that it has really contributed to a direction of investigation, and that has led me to where I am. And why it was that it was psychedelics for me and not nutrigenomics, I don't know, or physics or something. It's that's a long thing to unpack, but I guess it just landed for me. I mean, maybe we'll call it a strange grace or magic or something.
I mean, synchronicity. Did they kind of help you through some type of suffering or anything like that? Like, I mean, I got into psychedelics on accident, pretty much. I was studying dreams and wanted to find the relationship between dreams and specifically DMT. And through that, what I realized is that I had a lot of underlying trauma that kind of needed taken care of, and didn't expect that to happen. So, I mean, is that something that kind of applies to your life as well through your experiences?
Yeah. I see. You're fishing for a specific area of answering. So I'll bite. Okay. So ever since I was a kid, I was curious about things like lucid dreaming, and as we got a little bit older, meditation, and I think that was a consequence of my a lot of nightmares that I suffered from as a kid, and trying to figure out what that all meant. And there's more to unpack, I think, about how my parents lived and their dynamic with the world that influenced the way that I show up and, you know, ponder my experience. But I ended up getting into psychedelics when I was like 15. I got into taking mushrooms when I was like 15, 16, which, you know, the wow factor is equal for a 16-year-old as it is for a 70-year-old, as it would have been for the monkeys, like however many hundreds of thousands or millions of years ago. But if we objectively, the content was very simple then compared to what it might be now, or for a 70-year-old, I wouldn't know. I'm only 30, right? So, but I ended up getting pretty deep into psychedelics in my early 20s, and a lot of frequent use of basically anything. I got very curious, like, what are these things? Like, where can I go? And just really hedonistic pleasure in just getting completely fucking altered. Mm-hmm. Can I swear? Cool.
Go ahead.
Completely fucking altered in whatever way is possible, without really having any sort of elderhood or older guidance, or because the type of guidance I had for drug use before this was something along the lines of don't do it, they're bad. So I didn't, and turns out that that's not entirely true. So I didn't really have a lot of that. I got myself really confused and very ill as a consequence of that type of lifestyle, which at some point I ended up wanting to no longer feel confused and ill. There's a video on my YouTube where I talk about a psychotic episode that I had, a psychosis that I went through as a consequence of mostly amphetamine use, which, tripping psychedelics, got into taking other things, got into pretty strict amphetamine use for a little while. But without zooming in too deep on anything, I ended up, on the other end of this substance use substance use problem that I had. And I was mostly controlling myself at that point, but then it was all broken still, and I didn't know what to do with it. And in some strange, serendipitous, thing that came up in my mind, it was like, oh, you know what might be a good way to recover from all this drug use? Taking more drugs. No, but I actually thought, I was listening to a lot of Terrence McKenna at the time, and I was reading Baba Ram Dass, formerly Richard Alpert, Be Here Now is his big book. Reading these guys and getting a lot about ayahuasca at the time, and thinking, so maybe it's what's that old saying, the hair of the dog? It's like a shot of whiskey in the morning is the best way to recover from a whiskey hangover. Terrible. I'm not standing behind that. Yeah. I mean, it does kind of work from my experience, but it's not the best choice. So I ended up thinking, like, okay, so maybe there is value here. And I just missed it. I misused them. Mm-hmm. So I got to a point where I decided the mushrooms were the way I would go. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I did my best. And over the course, like the intensive work that I was doing was once a month, every month for 13 months in the full moon, I took about like between 2.5 to 4.5 grams, starting smaller and getting bigger, and just asked myself, like, what do I need to heal? What do I need to heal? And then between each month, I would have the experience, and then I'd be integrating that experience, reflecting on it, thinking about it, writing about it, letting it land in my life while also gearing myself up for the next month. I remember even when I was 23, late, maybe 24. Yeah, about 24. And I got hired at this cafe when I moved to Calgary. And we were talking in the hiring process in the interview, and I said, if you hire me, I need to have the night of and day after every full moon off, because I have a religious practice that includes eating psychedelic mushrooms under the full moon. Wow. And she just looked at me for a second. She was like, yeah, all right. I think that might have been one of the reasons that they hired me, because they're like, this guy's interesting. Yeah, that was the process. After the 13 months, a lot of what would become my first book, Decomposing the Shadow, and the foundation of my work since there was established. And I got really curious. I was like, wow, these mushrooms helped me. I came out on the other side of that a little new aging for sure. A little idealistic, a little too heavy on the love and light vibe. But also at the same time, I felt like I had really come to recognize the value of processing my dark emotions. Maybe not the love and light vibe, but the ascension vibe a little bit. Okay. Which is funny because it might not be reflected in the book so much, but it was reflected in my work. It was almost like a future me was like, don't put that stuff in there. You won't stand behind it. You know, in a few years
things
time.
Are going to change.
Yeah. So, so that was the foundation. I felt like I had discovered something valuable about how to work with the mushrooms and their potential that I didn't see anywhere else. Now it's really ripe and relevant all over the place now, but in 2011, when I started writing this book, it wasn't really anywhere, not anywhere that I could see it, not discussions like this. There might've been, you know, a couple books giving modern language to working with the mushrooms in a sacred and sort of psychologically informed way. But not really. So I felt like it was, I mean, this sounds really like messianic or something. It was like my mission, you know, to deliver the words of the mushrooms onto the people. Cause I saw the positive impact it was having on my community. As I shared my ideas with them. Mm-hmm. And also because during a trip, the mushrooms were like, write a book. Like, really? Write a book. I'm like, okay, mushroom. I've obviously, like, that was, it's, I wrote, yeah, Decomposing the Shadow came out in 2013. So that was 5 years ago. I've grown up a lot since then, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that was what informed sort of the initial exploration. It was very much like, I'm broken. Uh-oh. How do I get better? And managed to get better. And psychedelics were a part of that getting, an essential, integral part of that getting better. And in some way, I felt like I had to tell the world. That's a very early 20s kind of thing. I need to tell everybody. Mm-hmm. I've got the answer. But then, you know, it just stuck around. I continued to just grow with it. And psychedelics are interwoven with a lot of what I do now, of course. That's the main sort of niche. That's the branded hook or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the work has really expanded a lot into things that have seemingly little to nothing to do with psychedelics. Intergenerational trauma, dying, relationships, early childhood developmental conditioning and its impact on mental health in adulthood. If I don't say psychedelics in that, you wouldn't think psychedelics when I say that. Mm-hmm. But if I start to explain to you how psychedelics are related, then it'll make obvious sense. It's like, oh, of course, you know, but the work has expanded a lot.
Interesting, yeah. What is your, I mean, sounds like a lot of what you deal with is mental health. And maybe depression. What is kind of your take on that, I guess, from your experiences with your community that you've kind of connected to? Like, you know, there's a typical view of depression being chemical, emotional, but kind of want to hear maybe what you have to think about that.
What is my view on mental health and depression? Pardon me for a second while I prepare you a 3-hour lecture. So I'd say that my view is that these things have a subjective root cause that has that is connected with, like I said the terminology a few times now, a chain of causal events that have come before us. Things that were set in motion long before we were born. Even, I mean, if we want to go really deep, long before our parents were born or our grandparents, a causal chain that ripples back all the way into our ancestry. It's like, why are, like, you guys are in the United States or in Canada?
Yeah, United States, yeah.
Right? So you both look Caucasian. What the hell are you doing in North America? You know, it's like, why did you immigrate there? Chances are, I don't know you, but I assume that you didn't come just to own slaves and kill natives.
Oh, no.
You probably came because you were fleeing something from the countries that you were originally from, which likely is a consequence of the Roman Christian conquest at some point. But, like, point is that it goes all the way back. But just to bring it close to home, something set us up to have a certain inner disposition that creates the inclination towards patterns of perception and behavior, and behavior including who we interact with, that rests inside of the way things are that we can't control, that are beyond our behavior, and that the interaction between these things creates a level of chronic stress and degradation that would become mental illness. And there's correlations of physical factors and epigenetic factors and genetic, inherited genetic factors, of course, although I believe that those things are correlations, direct correlations, not causations, with subjective factors. And this isn't to say that it's not real, it's just in the mind. You know, it's like saying, oh, I'm in love. No, you're not. It's just in the mind.
Yeah. You know,
I'm feeling really fucking aroused right now. No, you're not. It's just in your mind. You're like, no, it's not just in my mind. But anyways, what I'm getting at here is that if my suggestion is that if that's the case, which I believe that it is, then there is a possibility to shift that as a consequence of shifting our subjective sense of self and experience, which can be done with psychedelics. And although it's correlated with physical, neurobiological things, and we can go the direction of altering neurobiological things to alter subjective things, if the subjective root of the issue is not resolved, then it's almost like just pulling up, like just like cutting off a dandelion and being like, I'll just make sure that I keep cutting it so that I don't have dandelions in my yard. But it does absolutely nothing to change the fact that that root is deep in the nitrogen rich compacted soil, trying to fix something. You know, depression is actually the manifestation. Your symptoms are a manifestation of your body trying to tell you something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is where psychedelics can come in. And I also, and this is, you know, looking at my own experience and looking at the research with depression, it's often looked at as a brain disease and absolutely an issue with the brain there. But if we look at it exclusively as a brain disease, we're going to make the mistake of thinking that there's a physical thing that we need to treat with a physical thing. There's a problem with the brain. That problem looks like serotonin depletion.
Right.
Let's put more serotonin in. Oh, depression goes away. The symptoms of depression go away. Problem solved.
Yeah.
But not really. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of suggestion too that the monoamine theory of depression is not actually accurate. That it has to do with neuroplasticity and it has to do with BDNF and the capacity for the brain to like grow new neuronal connections for the hippocampus to function properly. And it has, you know, it's a consequence of chronic stress. And I feel like I'm getting into muddy waters here, going a little bit out to sea. And I don't want to do that too much because I haven't prepared to answer this question clearly.
Okay.
But I mean, that's where I'm coming from in regards to mental illness. And I want to be clear that this isn't a simplistic answer. It's like you just got to change your mind. That would be arrogant and ignorant for me to say. But what I'm suggesting is that there's a deep subjective root from which mental illness blossoms. Mm-hmm. And there are a series of physical, social, psychological, maybe spiritual, and emotional correlates that are around that.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean, I had chronic depression pretty much the majority of my life, up into my mid-20s when I started diving into ayahuasca as well as like other hallucinogens. And what I found is my depression went away, but it wasn't primarily just because I took drugs, you know, it was because I was able to incorporate some of those lessons from the experiences, as well as reflecting on my own life and figuring out, you know, what the meaning of my life is and why maybe depression was there. But ultimately, I don't know what fixed it. You know, it kind of went away through that process. So I get what you're saying. It's not just like a simple thing that you just take a pill for, you know, like you can do psychedelics or you can do mushrooms and then your depression just magically goes away. You know, it doesn't work like that, I don't think. And it sounds like that you're on the same page with that, I guess.
Similar pages anyways. I mean, we haven't really had much chance to dive into the complexities of it, but yeah, it's, and that's a good point, that I didn't make explicitly clear. If depression were a problem with, like just a simple issue that we just needed to take a drug to fix, well, it wouldn't be an epidemic, right? And if psychedelics were we'll just say mushrooms, if all we had to do was take mushrooms and our depression went away, well, we wouldn't have people who take psychedelics also feeling depressed.
Yeah. You know,
there wouldn't require, if psychedelics inherently just made you a better person, happier, healthier, you know, like a better dad, you know, a more, you know, supportive sister or whatever, you know, like if that were the case, then we'd be in a much better way in this world. If it were the case that psychedelics made people fundamentally better, then why the hell didn't the 60s result in the utopia that they were shooting for, you know? And with so many millions of people around the world taking psychedelics, why are we in such a goddamn mess, right?
Yeah.
They're really dependent on a specific context. And that context is how we look at them, how we integrate them, what we are seeking to get out of them, the social context in which we use them. There's a lot of nuances to fine-tune, and how we fine-tune those nuances will influence what the impact is on who we are and how we conduct ourselves in the world. And a lot of my work is around exploring how to call in these bigger, more mature questions. Not to say that I'm more mature than others or anything, I'm not necessarily making that claim, but I would say that, you know, how can my psilocybin experience contribute to my relationship to my inevitable death is a little bit more of a mature question than how can I, you know, how many mushrooms should I take to get super off my head, right? Yeah. So, or just like, why do I see this pattern everywhere? Well, I don't want to go there. I think there's something to be said about metaphysical questioning, but to call in larger, more nuanced, more mature considerations into the, you know, our sort of larger social or collective set around psychedelics.
Definitely. Just I don't know, I guess pivot this line of questioning away from that. The concept of like context in terms of these psychedelic psilocybin experiences and the communities that revolve around these types of experiences. I've noticed that they've been cropping up. Communities have been cropping up all over the place. It's like becoming more and more common in the cultural consciousness that these types of things exist. Me and Lee actually went to like a psychedelic meetup not too long ago in Seattle, and it was just like in a park, and all kinds of people just showed up, but they're coming from different places, different contexts of experiences. So it was kind of interesting to see like the people that were, you know, EDM, like tribal type people that are like, you know, there's people that were, you know, part of that culture, but wanted to talk about different things. But other people wanted to be like, hey, this is my trip. I saw, did you see, you know, the pink elephant or whatever, that kind of thing. They just want to talk about the trip. And other people that were like, you know, what does this mean about, you know, the nature of reality? And other people are like, hey, these types of things have, you know, effects on the brain, and maybe we can, like, you know, neurohack ourselves and create a more longer lasting memory or better memory, or, you know, some type of neurological effect that is beneficial. So it's what in your experience, how do you see the communities that you're involved with, and like, what are the means to find them nowadays? I mean, obviously you can do like a Google search and be like, psychedelic meetups in, you know, Colorado or, you know, Seattle, and you might find something. But typically, what's your approach to finding these communities? How can somebody find a community like this?
Well, that's an excellent question. And before I mention it, I want to step back a bit. Or before I answer or address that question, I want to step back a bit. Something that you said there was, I think, really relevant to unpack a little bit about the diversity of perspective that comes into this, comes in when people meet around just the topic of psychedelics. And sort of going back into where I struggled with having said that I'm seeking a more mature exploration and being like, oh, I don't know, like, am I more mature than others? I think, and what you said there kind of like landed. It's like that maturity comes from being able to acknowledge and explore like a nuance of perspective and to look at things from a diversity of perspectives. And within that, allow it to grow in the same way that a child moves from understanding themselves as a member of the family to understanding themselves as a citizen of the world. You know, it's like being able to bring in that diversity to create a greater maturity, like a greater sort of stronger foundation from which we can ask questions, we can take different questions and explore different considerations. And as much as I feel very confident about the direction that I'm going with my work, I also don't want to unintentionally represent or accidentally embody a sort of ethnocentrism within psychedelic culture, while at the same time feeling confident in the value of the sort of cultural angle in which I'm exploring that particular topic. So, or those particular topics, psychedelics as a topic.
Gotcha.
So into finding other people, which would of course positively impact that sort of that progression of bringing in a diversity of perspective. I mean, just Googling psychedelic meetups on, you know, in whatever city you're in is definitely a way to do that. Although one way that I think has a positive impact socially, and this is one that we have to, that can be precarious, and we must, I think a lot of times sort of be trepidatious in moving towards, which is just talking openly about it. And not like really intensely, but just like slipping little things in and assessing how people respond. Okay. Slipping little things in that sort of confidently say, oh yeah, I'm curious about psychedelics. It's like, you know, meeting new people or making new friends, or talking with people. It's like, oh, hey, you know, what's up? Oh, I'm just reading this book on psychedelic therapy. Have you heard of psychedelic therapy? Questions, yeah, like this. Yeah. And just sort of like testing the grounds, even to the point of, for example, I mean, at that point, I felt like I had nothing to lose. I was like, I'm fucking telling everybody. We need to destigmatize this stuff. But when I was getting hired for this job, it was like, oh yeah, by the way, I meet every full moon off because I have a religious ritual where I eat hallucinogenic mushrooms in the woods by myself and, like, you know, postulate to the moon or something. Prostate. Anyways, I mean, that's an element that can come into psychedelics, you know, but
oh,
anyway,
definitely.
Yeah, that I think that there's something there too and assess things, but we should, you know, it makes sense to be cautious because we don't want to lose certain standing in our community or in our career or in the social network as a consequence of people being frightened or judgmental or to view us through the stigma which they inherited as a consequence of how psychedelics have been represented in the modern world for the last, you know, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to be considered too. It doesn't make sense to bring it up in your workplace if you think it'll cause you to get fired or sent to HR on probation or something. So, but yeah, not, you know, being courageous in testing the waters in that way. And you might be surprised on who you find is actually in alignment with your curiosities in that sense.
That's a great answer. I wasn't expecting. But got anything else, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, circling back to your work, can you tell us a little bit about your book and kind of dive into like a just a short version of what's in there and people can read?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two books, Decomposing the Shadow and The True Light of Darkness. Both of them explore the sort of the foundation of my work around psilocybin, in particular the value in passing through and surrendering onto the more painful, dark, or uncomfortable aspects of it. Decomposing the Shadow gives a pretty strong, we'll say, academic or scholarly model or explanation for working with psilocybin for the means of personal growth, resolution of emotional repression, and what I explain in the book as psychospiritual maturation. Okay. Which is a term that the concept I still stand behind, but the term I don't use so much as I used to. And then The True Light of Darkness explores the very same premise, but whereas Decomposing the Shadow does so from a, you know, a scholarly intellectual approach, The True Light of Darkness explores it through the meat of storytelling, through the meal that is storytelling. So it's a telling of my encounters, three specific trips that I had, which I applied the model presented in Decomposing the Shadow to the lived experience of facing my own darkness during psychedelic trip, wherein of the three stories, each of them increases in darkness and complexity as the narrative progresses. Literal darkness, you know, from tripping with friends in the daytime in the first story and tripping by myself in a float tank in the third story.
Oh, wow.
But also darkness in a metaphorical sense from, oh, you know, I'm having a hard time with my career to I'm like, well, I don't want to say, but the last story is like quite dark. So those are the two books. And I wrote them because for some people, what they want is just juicy ideas to chew on. And for other people, what works best for them is actually to read a story. And I actually believe that stories offer a lot more than intellectual explanations. And wouldn't say that I've given up on writing heady intellectualized content in any way. I feel really curious about the power of storytelling to share ideas and to share whatever slivers of wisdom I might have earned in the years that I've lived and in whatever years I would be so blessed to continue to live.
Yeah. Nice. I guess I have two different questions. What is your, sounds like you've used multiple different types of psychedelics, reading your blog. What is your most, impactful, type of hallucinogen that you've used and maybe why? And then, what do you see as the future of psychedelic use in, say in the Western world?
Well, those are two very different questions. Well, every psychedelic that I've taken has been impactful. Some of which I found myself a lot like the wake of those psychedelic experiences were more turbulent or more impactful. Certainly my work with psilocybin has obviously been very impactful. My work with ayahuasca has also been very impactful, though in a less clean way, certainly less clean. I mean, literally, like I got it all over me. You've taken ayahuasca, so you probably know what I'm referencing here. But also LSD has been very impactful as well. And same with, you know, all the other ones I've tried, they've been very impactful. It's the ones that I've explored more deeply that, of course, would have a greater impact because I would go deeper and deeper into the potentials of that experience each time I would go.
Do you find yourself like building type of relationship with the psychedelic itself, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the same way that I might, you know, build a relationship with coffee or build a relationship with a particular writer, right, for example. And then there are some ones that I've tried specifically. It's like, what is this letter number combination going to do for my subjective experience? And some that I've tried that have been like, that was interesting. Not entirely sure, you know, the value of this other than that was interesting. Like it wasn't immediately relevant, at least not enough so that I would want to keep exploring. Like 2CI, for example, that was a very interesting experience a couple times that I've tried it. But I wasn't exactly sure outside of an interesting experience what the value of it was for me. But then again, maybe it just also depends on the person.
Right.
For some people, certain molecules are like, that's the ticket. And then, sorry, what was your second question?
The second question is like, what do you see as the future of psychedelic use and how it's possibly changing like Western society?
You know, I have a way that I've answered that question previously that might have some value now, but I'm not sure I'm feeling so enthused by that answer. I think it could have a really positive effect because at the very least, psychedelics ask us or invite us to ask different questions about what is happening and what are the nature of things. And that in and of itself might be really positive to break us out of certain insular ideological frameworks to consider something else. Now, that could be a slippery slope because the thing that we could be considering could be increasingly detached from the, you know, the very real responsibilities we have as humans alive right now in a very troubled time, socially, politically, ecologically. And it could be, you know, pretty quick that psychedelics make us prioritize spiritual ascension and our own personal enlightenment or our own personal growth to the point wherein nobody can actually ask us for any real help on anything that has any relevancy to the world that goes beyond us because we're too obsessed with ourselves and my spiritual evolution, blah, blah, blah. And insofar as the way that they are definitely coming in now in medicine, and I think it's not a far stretch to step from medicine into philosophy. I don't think it'll be very long before the next wave of psychedelic research will be in the academic field of philosophy, which is a great place for it, I think. That as it steps in medicine, and you think about, you know, what is the impact of a person who's never taken psychedelics, who's depressed, and you know lives in the conventional world. And they have a psychedelic experience. They have a, you know, psilocybin occasioned mystical type experience inside of a therapeutic container. And that now informs, or for some time will inform, their experience of life and will be the thing that's on the tip of their tongue when they're interacting with others, when they're interacting with their family, the impact of it, if not the literal explanation or re-encounter. Recounting of the experience. And then if we imagine what it might be like if that type of therapeutic treatment became so normalized that a vast majority of people who are suffering from depression end up going through psilocybin therapy, rather than the tricyclic antidepressants. And that even it becomes normalized for nicotine addiction. And instead of getting on the patch, you take some psilocybin in a therapeutic container. And as that becomes more normalized and less stigmatized, what does that do? What is the impact that might have on the quality and content of discourse in the general public sphere?
Great and question.
Without actually saying what that might be, I believe that it could be very positive.
Yeah, definitely.
It could be very positive, especially if those things, if those experiences are held in a very grounded way, which inside of the current established therapeutic containers, it is in a very grounded way. Now, I don't think we should stay too grounded for too long, because then we'll just grind our way back into another rut. But I do see that there could be some really dramatic value there.
Nice.
Definitely.
Well, thanks, man. That was a great answer, and it was kept it wide open. So we'll have to see what the future beholds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's also a great note to end on. Is there anything else you left lingering in your mind before we leave the listeners today?
Mm. Well, every time or any time I am mildly unprepared and I just like shoot arrows into the air and hope they all land at bullseye, I feel a little apprehensive about whether or not I spun a bunch of yarns that, you know, wove an itchy sweater that nobody will want to wear. But other than that, I feel great. I'm glad that you guys invited me on the show. Maybe I could do a little invitation for people to follow me.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, I hope that loud sound didn't just come
through. No, it's good, man. Don't worry about it. We can add it down if it have to.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, if people would like to follow my work, jameswjessup.com is where it's all contained. Like, even I'll put up a blog post that features this this interview when the time comes. And you can find there my writing, my podcast, my links to my YouTube channel. I do smaller videos. Right now I'm working on a video about death and dying, which, you know, talking about ego death and talking about actually dying. Mm-hmm. That'll be coming out pretty soon. To follow me on social media, just look James W. Jesso at James W. Jesso. Primarily it's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram right now. And if people would like to come see me on tour, depending on when this podcast released, you can do so by checking me out, jameswjessup.com, jameswjessup.com, sometimes I don't announce it in my words, /events to see where I'm going to be and when. And and you can find my books. That's a lot of things. And you can find my books on Amazon. But all you have to remember is jameswjessup.com. That's where it all is.
Awesome.
Easy enough, man. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us. I know you're incredibly busy with getting ready to travel. And so I appreciate you coming on, spending time with us. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers. I appreciate that you guys invited me to have on. I saw some of your other speakers. I noticed that you had James Orrock just recently on the show. He's an excellent character. So it feels good to be a part of the established alumni so far, and I just want to congratulate you guys on making the effort to have another angle of approach being brought into this topic for the public record with this podcast. So kudos to you guys for that.
If you enjoyed this episode of Cosmic Echo and would like to hear more about James and his work, you can visit our website at taileaters.com/CE podcast. And there you can click on links that will take you to his book as well as his website. Additionally, if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support us, you can do so through our Patreon page located at the same site. We look forward to bringing you additional episodes in the near future, but until then, happy dreaming.